Snapchat.
Malcolm Turnbull announced that the laws of math do not apply here.
One of my favourite brands of comedy, Ariel, is brown people and black people making fun of white people.
Senators have been dropping like flies recently.
Shouting out the fact that in the Knowles Carter family, women just have one name.
Backchat on FBI Radio.
Yes, that's right. You're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio, bringing you the hottest in current affairs. On your radio, I'm Johnny Liu.
And I'm Swetha Das.
Yeah, filling in for Ozma Faruqi and Ariel Bogle, who are off on their overseas jaunt still. Hope they're having fun. I've been looking at them on Twitter.
We're having more fun here.
I bet, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, Ozpol has been pretty boring this week, so we are casting our eyes across the seas to Trump's UN speech and towards New Zealand's election with an interview with Duncan Grieve from the spin-off. But first, let's talk about Trump, and who doesn't love talking about Trump? I know I do. The US president delivered a speech to the UN General Assembly in New York, calling for other countries to up the ante against North Korea if the threat of sanctions weren't enough.
Yeah, he labelled North Korea as depraved, responsible for the starvation of its people, and used the example of the treatment of American student Otto Warmbier, who was imprisoned back in 2016 after stealing a poster in a hotel he was staying in. Of course, he was released back early this year. Suddenly, he died shortly after to a mysterious brain injury. Mm. Anyway, it doesn't come as a surprise that Trump has come out and said this is against North Korea. Here's what he said.
The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about.
Yes, the United Nations. So, again, it's not surprising that Trump has come out against North Korea. But the latest speech, you know, I guess smells of a power play and to put pressure on China to do something. So China, obviously, is North Korea's largest trading partner and, by default, their biggest ally.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So in their speech, Trump thanks China and Russia for agreeing to impose sanctions on the UN vote, which was like a 15... all 15 nations agreed to do so. Yeah. So yeah, he's pretty keen on having North Korea's neighbours on side with America, obviously South Korea and Japan.
Definitely.
Keen to keep North Korea back away.
Yeah, it's odd because, you know, you have now China and Russia supporting these sanctions. And so if your goal is to stop North Korea from using the nuclear weapons, I don't know how this is going to work, you know, because they're going to be more scared now that they've lost China to America.
Exactly. Well, actually, perhaps they're not scared. Now they've come back with a few creative insults. So this after this speech, this is what Kim Jong-un hit back with.
I will surely and definitely tame the mentally deranged U.S. dotard with fire.
Doted.
Yeah, I've never heard.
Do you know what that means?
I don't know. Well, if you probably studied Shakespeare, maybe that would come clear to you. I'm not sure.
It has come up in Shakespeare. It's been in Much Ado About Nothing, according to the New York Times. So Merriam-Webster defines doted as a word meaning a state or period of senile decay marked by decline of mental poise and alertness.
It rhymes with goat herd, it just says in my notes.
It does. That's important.
The word, yeah, makes a few appearances in Shakespeare,
it
right?
It does make a few appearances in Shakespeare. It's quite an interesting word. I think it's quite a clever insult, to be honest.
Something picked from the dictionary. I'd probably do the same. When I'm like, you know, trying to think of insults, I'm like, they all look at the thesaurus and come up with something like...
We all use thesaurus.com in our essays.
I know.
Why not use it on Twitter? You know? I mean, it's a very apt word, I think. I mean, I don't know. North Korea has a history of using pretty... would you say colourful insults?
I would say creative insults.
Creative
Run
insults.
Me through them.
Yeah, okay. So I have two here. So North Korea described President George W. Bush, our favourite, as a political idiot. I didn't say it. They said it.
Yeah.
And a tyrannical imbecile who lacks even an iota of elementary reason, morality, and ability to judge reality as a human being.
Well.
Yeah, they didn't hold back, right?
Yeah, and Clinton as well. Sometimes she looks like a primary school girl. And sometimes a pensioner going shopping, gosh.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds like Christmas at my house. Just really going at it. I mean, like a bit sexist, a bit, you know, just a bit classist. They go for it.
So much Clinton hate. Hey, we're going to play a song to hopefully inspire some love. This is Gussie's In Order to Love.
While we obsess over our postal survey, across the Tasman, New Zealand is obsessing over their very own democratic survey, except theirs is legally binding. It's a real-deal parliamentary election. They go to the polls today to choose between newcomer Labour leader Jacinda Ardern and the incumbent Bill English of the centre-right National Party. To get a grip on New Zealand's parliamentary election, I called up Duncan Grieve from The Spin-off.
New Zealand's Labour leader Andrew Little resigned and Jacinda Ardern took over. Since she's seen a tremendous surge, gaining about 20% in the polls, is she New Zealand's Jeremy Corbyn?
It's funny because Andrew Little was New Zealand's Jeremy Corbyn, like a sort of an older guy put installed by the unions against the will of his caucus. So that was kind of framed as a kind of a retaking of Labour, taking back of Labour by its sort of constituent parts after a couple of fairly dismal results from more sort of broadly more sort of centrist leaders, and then it just didn't happen, and it kept not happening. And Little, who was a sort of a solid, in some ways solid, dependable person, just wasn't connecting. And Ardern, who really came from nowhere, she'd been a reliable MP, but she was elevated to the deputy leadership in only in March, and it was almost she was almost forced to become leader. Kind of against her will, that there it just such was the surge behind her, and she, in some ways, is the antithesis of Corbyn. She's young, she's female, she worked under Tony Blair. She's had a very Corbyn-like effect, particularly during the campaign. The polls took off almost instantaneously, and while this is starting to throttle back a bit now, the actual ultimate impact of her and definitely the sort of sentiment of what she's saying, which very much maps with what Corbyn has said, has certainly had that galvanising effect on a broadly disaffected voter base.
So what do you think is behind that surge? Where is her support mostly coming from?
Well, I think, you're looking at a three-term government asking for a fourth, which is always a really hard ask. Just before now, there hasn't been a victor that felt particularly different. Andrew Little and Bill English are basically the same age. They represent the same kind of interest groups of their parties. Neither of them were particularly inspiring communicators, so that it didn't feel like there was a huge point of difference in the election. And suddenly you had this young woman representing, like a millennial in charge of one of our two biggest parties, talking, just speaking in kind of much more rhetorically interesting terms. It just felt like, we've had baby boomers and basically in charge of sort of 30 plus years, and suddenly there was someone who wasn't like that, who just felt a lot more relatable, I guess. And as a result, you just had product differentiation as much as anything. And, that's, I think, largely what has driven this huge influx in support.
Yeah, right. What issues do people seem to be responding to? What are people interested in this election?
New Zealand's had these kind of long-running issues, in a relatively affluent society, which with the GFC basically, in GDP terms and in employment terms, probably better than almost any other OECD nation. So it feels like a country which is doing pretty well, yet it's had these kind of really ugly statistics that it hasn't really been able to move. The statistics around child poverty, around imprisoning of our sort of Indigenous and Pacifica populations, house price inflation that's just kind of gone completely unanchored from incomes. And as a result, you know, for, I think particularly for younger people, for people sort of around Ardern's age and younger, they've been watching this stuff and feeling kind of hopeless and like that they're deeply concerned about it, but not like those of the government or really the opposition or their parents' generation were particularly interested in those problems or even saw them as mattering. And suddenly you had this leader who said that the child poverty was the reason that they got into politics, who was, you know, sort of vowing to solve problems which had not really been part of the political discussion for a long time, emphasising them. I think she basically made, and it's not like Andrew Little hadn't been talking about those things, but with Ardern, for whatever reason, you just felt like she meant it. And that's been, you know, a huge amount of where that's come from, just being able to kind of convincingly articulate New Zealand's issues and positively articulate a solution to them.
So voting isn't compulsory in New Zealand, and in the last election, 78% of people voted, but that's pretty close to New Zealand's all-time low of 74% in 2011. Do you think people are energized this time? Do you think people are going to show up?
Yeah, well, it's a race now. In the past two elections, John Key has inflicted pretty crushing defeats on John Key's National Party, inflicted pretty crushing defeats on the opposition Labour Party, and those are well forecast by the polls. This time around, it's been on a knife edge ever since Ardern was elevated. So we've had 6 weeks of it being a true race for the first time in 9 years. I think that has had a, you know, there's just been a lot more coverage and a lot more of a sense that this election was in play in a way that they haven't been for a while. Additionally, this is the first election where we've had 2 weeks of advance voting, which anyone can participate in, and the numbers there are extraordinary. Yesterday alone, we had as many advance votes as were cast in the entirety of the 2014 advance voting period. So the thinking is that at least half, if not more, of the eligible voting population will have voted ahead of Election Day on Saturday. And with polls kind of oscillating around enough to energise both parties' bases, I think there's a good chance that we actually see, you know, an uptick on that number, which had been falling for a while now as a result of the advance voting.
Yeah, right. We are taping this on Thursday, and election is Saturday. I saw a poll that came out last night showing that there was a surge for the Nationals, the centre-right party that is currently in power. What do you think is behind that?
If you were to kind of critique Ardern's performance, which has largely been sort of exemplary, and that surge towards Labour has exemplified that, you would say that she has been sort of unable to kind of state a concrete position on tax, and the National Party has, you know, after initially sort of not really knowing what to do with Ardern, has sort of settled on a negative campaign around, you know, her refusing to, for a long time, kind of say that which taxes were in play. So there was this idea that we would have a capital gains tax, a land tax, potentially an inheritance tax. And while she's ruled any of those out now, there were sort of 2 weeks plus when those were essentially on the table. And I think that, you know, for that sort of middle New Zealand voter, that was, you know, that was a very effective strategy. And, you know, I think there was a period where, you know, we were just sort of overwhelmed with Ardern, to the point where we weren't really kind of considering alternatives. And I think that it is now, it does feel like a much more even race. But that poll yesterday, which did have National bouncing back, the last three polls, two have reflected that, and one has gone the other way and suggested that Labour in the lead. We've got a final poll which comes out tonight, and I think if that shows that the National are retaining that advantage, then, you know, you'll consider that better then. If it goes back Labour's way, then you know, we're back to the same sort of we don't actually know anything kind of situation that we've always been in.
You're obviously going to be out on Saturday. What are you going to be looking for?
I'm selling Girl Guide biscuits with my 8-year-old daughter at a voting booth. So I'm quite excited about that. I think it'll be pretty fun. You know, like I enjoy doing it anyway because Robin, my daughter, gets a kick out of it. But also, I think I've got this weird feeling like if the weather's sunny, then Labour are going to win, and if it's raining, they won't. It's probably based on nothing and superstitious, but there's this kind of sense that there's part of the country that's rooting for something new, and there has been this, you know, Ardern described her campaign as relentlessly optimistic, and she's largely stuck to that and been visibly frustrated at National's kind of negative tactics. And I think if the, you know, it feels like it's such a tight election, and the, you know, what it's being campaigned on is so, you know, it could turn on a knife edge, and you sort of think, you know, something as ridiculous as the weather on election day might be enough to kind of get a bunch of people who are sort of marginal voters out and casting. But in all probably that's just a ludicrous superstition, you know. The one thing that will be interesting, the thing that's going to be real interesting, I think, is that advance vote thing, which in the past we, you know, those votes were counted as specials and came in the following day, so we really didn't know, have a true sense of what the outcome would be until very late that night, and things would sort of move that following day. Now these votes are going to be counted during the period where polls are open on Saturday, and they're likely to all come in as a lump at 7:05 kind of thing, or at 7 o'clock when polls close, which kind of ruins some of the drama of election day. So as someone who just loves the kind of blood sport in politics and loves the theatre of watching these results and sort of trickle in, I'm kind of a bit apprehensive that we might sort of know a lot almost immediately, and, you know, it kind of bums me out. But also just this campaign has been running so long that everyone just kind of wants to know, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. I hope you have a lovely day with your daughter on Saturday.
Thank you. It's going to be fascinating.
You're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio. That was me talking to Duncan Grieve from New Zealand's The Spinoff. For those wondering at home, it's cloudy and 17 degrees in Auckland today, so who knows what that's going to mean for the election.
Yeah, it's a bit chilly. I wonder if they have sausage sizzles over there.
That's an excellent question.
I know. Can someone, if you are a Kiwi, I would like to know. Because voting's not compulsory in New Zealand, so it has even more impetus as an incentive.
What's the point?
Right. I was saying earlier that I paid $3.50 for my democracy sausage. I don't like democracy that much.
Yeah,
but $3.50.
Yeah, but if it's like a public school and, you know, like it's going to the kids.
I mean, you know.
Come on, say that thing that you don't like about not liking the kids.
No, it's fine. I support Girl Guides. It's fine. I'll give my $3. And also $2 for a can, please.
Oh, craziness.
Please. Let's see if in New Zealand, sausages must be much cheaper because if it's not compulsory.
Let us know. If you know, please text in.
Let us know.
So the number is 0409-945-945. 0409-945-945. Please, let us know.
All right, now it is time for our favorite segment of the week, and that is Backchat Roulette. Oh, Oz isn't here for his air horns. They're his favorite part. Anyway, in this section we talk about things that have caught our eye this week or something we want to give a shout out to. So, Johnny, want to go first?
Yeah, so overnight, Uber has been not been given a license to operate in London, its biggest European market. So Transport for London has decided not to grant it a private hire license on the basis that it's not fit and proper. So it's identified a few safety issues, and it's kind of worrying, actually. One of the things they're concerned about is their, not willingness to report serious criminal issues that are happening in Ubers, and also using a software to block authorities from conducting their duties. So if they're out there, you know, ensuring that, you know, Ubers are following the law, that Uber can actually come up with software to make sure these authorities are, you know, getting the right Ubers, basically. So, yeah, look, Uber has been operating on a temporary license since 2012, and it will expire on September 30. It will be able to appeal, so throughout that appeals process, it can continue operating. There are about 35,000 drivers in London, which is a massive number. You know, it's faced battles with black cabs, but somehow it's been able to crash through this market unchallenged. Crash through this unchallenged market, because black cabs have been around for decades, and it's been, you know, it's quite difficult to become a driver. You have to undertake the knowledge, their legendary, you know, test for cab drivers, where you have to know each street and whatnot. There's a really good piece on The Guardian called How Uber Conquered London. It's basically, you know, detailing the many disruptions in London transport over the years. And yeah, please go have a read.
I'd be really surprised to see how this all turns out, because I really think Uber really does run London at the moment.
Yeah, it's significantly cheaper.
But also public transport is really good there.
It's also really expensive though. Like, you know, you get on the tube, it's going to cost you $5 just to like go to the next stop.
Yeah, and when I was in London last year, they were doing like crazy deals, like zone 1, zone 2 for like £5, which is about $9. So like zone 1, zone 2 is like a massive area.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like traveling from here to Strathfield for only like $9. It's like, okay, well, it's even bigger than that. So yeah, it's a massive area. Yeah,
definitely.
Anyway, who's on the
roulette? All right, Swetha.
Yeah, all right.
What's your roulette this week?
I'm really excited about this one. I don't know if you've been watching the onslaught of new comedies, stand-up comedies coming out on Netflix, but one that I really liked, and it's old news, but it's Hasan Minhaj's Homecoming King. Did you guys get to see that?
No.
Oh, it's so good. I really recommend it. So Hasan Minhaj did the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and he was the second person in history to ever get a standing ovation. He did a phenomenal job, and Trump wasn't there, and he did such a good job. And then his special came out, and it is just it is brilliant storytelling. And he doesn't shy away from like real issues. So he talks about what it's like to navigate America after 9/11. He recounts how he's planning to go to prom with his white girlfriend, and then he gets to her place after like sneaking out of his house, and his white girlfriend's parents were like, no, you can't go with her, we want our pictures to be with the white dude. And then he just goes home and plays Xbox. Is really sad. Yeah, so it's very funny. As sad as all that is, it's a very funny comedy special, and he does it so well because he is able to combine humor with talking about real political issues, which I think is really important. So I really recommend that.
Good vibes.
Yeah. How about you, Sam?
All right. Well, following on from this week's theme of, you know, just turning our back on Australia, I'm going to shout out to an old favorite of mine. It's a podcast called Desert Island Discs. Mm-hmm. It's really an old favorite. It's been around for about 75 years. It started during the war. It's a BBC structured interview. Basically, they get in a guest every week to talk about their life, and they have to choose 7 songs that they're going to take with them to a desert island when the world ends, because, you know, they made this in the 40s. But right now it's hosted by Kirstie Alley, who I think, like, literally has the best voice on radio. And
sorry, Kirstie Alley?
Yeah.
Whoa, right. The Kirstie Alley, as in, like, what, 30 Rock from the Sun Kirstie Alley? Or am I being wrong?
No.
I'm like, what?
No,
what's
it's
your name podcast? No. A BBC podcast.
I would love to listen to that.
I wish that was the case. No, actually, I don't, because the host voice is like,
it's beautiful.
Really, yeah. Truly beautiful. Yeah, it's Kirstie Young.
Kirstie Young.
Kirstie
okay,
Young.
I was like,
why did you say
that? I don't know. I think I lost my mind.
This is wish fulfillment. That's maybe okay. Next week.
You're right. Kirstie Alley is the person you're thinking of. No, Kirstie Young. I'm so sorry, Kirstie Young.
Yeah.
The one time that I take to the airwaves to like give you all of my love, I screw it up. Anyway, Kirstie Young literally is the best voice on radio and is an amazing interviewer. And listening to her is just like, I think, the most relaxing thing you can do with your time. So just you sit back and her like dulcet tones wash over you as she like extracts these like beautiful and moving life stories from people.
Yeah.
And the theme music is pretty good as well. Anyway, that is my hot pick of probably my lifetime. I think it's my favorite thing to listen to.
Hot pick of your lifetime. That is a...
You can never come on the show again.
Hey, no, I'll just come back with with Desert Island Discs every time.
Have you guys heard of Desert Island Discs? No? Okay. Well, yes. Thank you so much, Sam, Setha, for joining us on Backchat. Well, joining me on Backchat.
Thank you so much, Johnny.
No problem. First time here. The OGs will be back next week. Oz and Ariel are going to be back from their little overseas jaunt. Thank you as well to our producers, Sam Johnsha, who's already thanked.
I'm here, sorry.
And Millie Zhao and Linda Hung as well, working down there at the back. I'm going to leave you with a song, HTML Flowers. Chrome Halo. I don't even know if you like even forward announce tracks here, but hey, I'm going to do it anyway.
You can do it.